This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:39 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And in case that didn't tip you off or you didn't think of a sort of jaunty proto Mickey Mouse with like a pipe on a tugboat, you know, we're talking today about animation, whether or not that is in film, whether it's in television, in shorts. That's what we're discussing, the beauty of it all.
Ah, you said in shorts, and I'm just totally imagining Mickey in his shorts. But the thing is, when we talk about animation, it becomes so overwhelmingly about Disney and more Pixar that we forget how many different kinds of animation there is and how many houses are doing such distinctive kinds of work in animation, to the point where if you're a bit of an animation nerd, you hear particular production houses and you know what that style is and the kind of storytelling that they would do. And that's not even considering, you know, Japan and anime, which is sort of an industry in its own right.
That was exactly what I wanted to ask you guys. When you hear the word animation or you see the word animation, what comes to your mind first? Like, does Disney pop up in your mind first, or do you think of something else? Because I will admit it's like five different Disney things, and then some other animation or some other cartoon will pop up. It's like Peter Pan or Lion King, and then some Pixar stuff. And then I'll think of maybe Fantastic Mr. Fox. But which is kind of unfair, right? Because even Disney's latest, like Luca, you could argue that it's inspired by something from, you know, something from Laika Studios or something from other studios, the way it looks.
But an anime.
So do you think of like Disney first, like the first thing?
I am completely brainwashed by the capitalist industry of Disney, because literally what comes to mind when you say animation is that castle and the, you know, that pops up at the beginning of every Disney film.
I don't think of Disney as animation, only because the capitalism brainwashing has worked so well on me. Clearly, they're going to sponsor our show after listening to this. all of it has worked for me in such a sense that Disney is Disney. So if anything, I associate Disney with the castle, yes, but also with princesses, with specific characters, with the songs, for example. And when I think of animation, actually, my mind goes to, more recently, I think, Ghibli, because it's just where I'm at the moment, or maybe it's because we've moved so far away from hand-drawn animation that when you say animate, that's the thing that goes that my mind goes back to, because everything else feels like it's so CG-ish and so far away from me drawing stick figures on my notebook and flipping it and going, see, I made an animation, you know? And so I guess that's where my head's at.
I must say that the other thing, of course, that comes to mind is all of those childhood cartoons that I watched. And because that's and therein lies that distinction between animation, which sounds a little bit more highfalutin, and cartoons, which then I think of Tom and Jerry and Bugs Bunny and all of those, which are also animation, but they do a very different thing and they sit in a very different space.
So that's my blind spot. When I think of it, I don't think of any of the cartoons. So even when you say cartoons, for some reason, I don't think of the Saturday morning stuff, quote unquote Saturday morning stuff. First, it was like 5:30 on RTM2, but they are lumped in like a different bracket, and Disney's like a different bracket. I honestly don't know, like, other than Disney, what I think of when I hear the word animation. I think of like weird 3D software and seeing like those making ofs, like you see like a 3D model do like weird movements and stuff, because it sounds like a very technical term. It's not an endearing term like film or TV. It sounds very technical, like someone's doing something in a computer lab somewhere.
So The thing that I actually wanted to talk about was why people don't like animation. And I think that part of it is the clinical nature that you just talked about, but also the fact that I think there is, for the longest time, right, calling it cartoons meant that it wasn't taken seriously, as if everything is just 5-minute shots of people getting banged over the head, a lump rising, falling off a cliff, and then that's it. Or as if because it's not real, because you're not watching real characters, therefore you cannot feel for them in a real way. And I think that this is actually still a conversation that you will have with people who need to be in the mood to watch animation, or who will only watch animation when it's from Pixar, for example, because it's a big release. And I do think, as much as we want to spend most of this show talking about why we love animation, I think a good entry point to that is talking about why it is that some people don't.
I think a lot of it has to do with the association of animation with children, and this idea of it's being something you outgrow. And I think those lines are blurring more and more as a whole generation of adults who have played games, video games, and grown up still playing those games, a whole generation of adults who are so used to CGI that often you can't tell the difference between when something is CGI and when it's real. So I feel like those boundaries are breaking down a little bit. But I think overall, it's that. Cartoons, quote unquote, are for kids, and at some point you outgrow them and start watching, you know, the adult films.
Also, it's kind of difficult to justify investing so much time in a cartoon, right? When you call something an animation or call something just a cartoon, then why would I put aside like 2 hours of my Friday night to watch this instead of watching something else on, you know, something more adult on Netflix or whatever? Why would I invest the time or go to the cinema or, you know, buy tickets or anything like that? I don't know. For me personally, I feel like that became a problem after I became an adult. I would sort of pick and choose. And it's not that I don't like animation, but I would feel like, okay, maybe I can watch this at home when it shows up on streaming services or show up on TV or whatever. If there's a choice, I would always go for live action. I don't know why. Like, I can't explain it, but it is a problem, lah.
I definitely felt it when I started. In between being a child and an adult. So in my teenage years in particular, I really disdained cartoons. I really disdained animation. And I think it is exactly that growing up process where you're saying, like, you know what? I am too old for cartoons, and I'm just better than that or whatever. And you just move away from it. And so, and I think even now when I think about the cartoons or the movies, the animations that came out during that period, I actually don't think of them with much fondness. I'm thinking here of something like Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, in which...
Oh my God.
See? You see? In which a horse with eyebrows is somehow the star of the film. And I think that we all have that moment of wanting to move away from the stuff that we grew up on and graduate to, I don't know, the guns, the One Ring, Sauron. I don't know why I'm full Lord of the Rings, but you know, you get what I mean.
I think partly also, right, there is a particular genre of animated films that, and really in the mid-2000s particularly, they were so kid-focused. So everything was that. So, I mean, I love Madagascar, for instance, but by Madagascar 7 or whatever number they're on, or Ice Age 25, you know, it's no longer doing the thing that it did in the first film. I actually really enjoyed Ice Age. I love Madagascar. But the law of diminishing returns meant that they were increasingly only making this for kids and for the toys and for the merchandising. And a certain adultness does kick in at one point where you're like, I don't think I want to watch this in a cinema. I don't think I want to watch it at all, in fact. You know, and I think that has to do with maybe realizing that animation is not a genre unto itself. Animation is a tool, and it can be used to tell multiple kinds of stories. So that particular kind, I realized, were not for me anymore.
Also, I was getting my animation fix from movies, like live-action films. Like, some of my favorite stuff is from the MCU, obviously. And those things are like cartoons. They're like live-action cartoons, and most of them don't even exist in, like, the real world. They're all, like, in computers, and they're CGI completely. 80% of those movies are animated. So whatever I was not getting in, like, the animation side of things, I was getting with, quote-unquote, more adult, more mature films that would disguise, like, these superhero films and stuff. So it was difficult to justify watching like a pure animated thing when there was so much more going on that in a way was more energetic and more cartoon than the traditional cartoons.
So we're talking today about cartoons, animation, call it what you will. And we want to know whether firstly you enjoy them, but also if you do, what are your favorites? We are already getting so many messages and we'll come back for those recommendations. You can, of course, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Just to say, before we close off on this side, that we did get one Instagram message from Ng that said Steamboat Willie. So one person did actually go super, super vintage. And we are going to be closing off this side with a clip from one of my all-time favorites. And we did also have one person, whatchamacallit, actually saying Kubo. And so here we go.
My name is Kubo. I look after my mother mostly. What was father like?
He was just like you. Strong and so handsome.
Ugh, mother. I use magic to tell stories.
If you must blink, do it now.
About epic battles, warriors, and monsters. But I had no idea my stories were actually true.
Kubo.
We've been looking for you for so long.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
With the slightest little effort of my ghost-like charms, I have seen grown men give out a shriek. With the wave of my hand in a well-placed bow, I have swept the very bravest off their feet. Yet year after year, it's the same routine, and I grow so weary of the sound of screams. And I, Jack, the Pumpkin King, have grown so tired of the same old thing.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:51 and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. Today we are talking about animation, which is why so far we've heard a little bit of, well, Steamboat Willie, as well as Kubo and Jack Skellington. So the last two clips that we played actually were both stop motion. And I thought we could talk a little bit about that because stop motion is so beautiful and creepy and time-consuming that it really deserves its own show.
Time-consuming is exactly right. You know, I sometimes wonder why anyone would even decide right. They wanted mm-hmm. to do stop motion. Like the amount of work that goes into moving, you know, handmade dolls every 3 inches and refilming it, the kind of artistry and craft that goes into it. I mean, I'm not saying I don't love the results, but this is why I think animation people are like hands down the biggest movie nerds ever, just because of how much effort they're willing to put into it.
Does anyone remember that thing, Ben Wyatt in Parks and Recreation realizing yes. that he had become depressed yep. because he had spent so much time on the stop motion?
He spent weeks on something that ended up being 3 seconds or something on screen.
No, but how is it fulfilling? I mean, I know the results are fulfilling, of course, when they see the movie like completed, right? But I didn't realize how much went into like actual stop motion until I saw like a documentary with Wes Anderson doing it and moving it like frame by frame by frame. And the same, like just like you, I was like, why would anyone do this? Like, and this was not even that old. This was for Isle of Dogs, which is about 3 years old. And by the time like Pixar was doing wonders with their CGI, so I was like, why would you still do this when you had computers to do the work? It's just like, it's either a badge of honor or it's a show-offy thing, or it's just like a Wes Anderson, Tim Burton. You can see the kind of people that mingle in these circles. Like, I know stop motion, or you know
well,
stop motion.
I was going to say, look at the people, Henry Selick, Tim Burton, Wes Anderson. You can hands down believe that they are probably sitting in their living rooms reveling in this process.
Yeah, but you know, we say that, right? And yet, for me at least, I think that this is, it scratches the exact same brain itch of seeing practical effects. And we are such huge fans here on the show, right? We constantly extol the virtues of practical effects. And it is exactly that. It is the ability to see the texture on their faces, the movement of the hands. I know that we've reached a point where, oh my God, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I know we've reached a point where we can make lions talk. I know that. I know that. I watched it, but it's not the same thing. And so I just love and appreciate, actually, if anything, recent movements or leaps forward in animation have made me appreciate going back to watch things like Nightmare Before Christmas. Kubo is not that old, but even things like that and seeing the difference.
I think that's exactly it, you know. I think the ease with which computer-generated imagery has taken over our screens. And there's that thing, right? You mentioned Lion King and the Uncanny Valley, where more and more you watch something and it doesn't quite feel real and you cannot put your finger on why. Is it the weightlessness? Is it that it has a bit too much of a sheen? And with stop motion, it looks real. There's no, like, you know, it's so real. You feel like... You feel like you're watching something that people made with their hands. And I think there's something very primal about relating to something like that.
Do you guys think it's like an acquired taste though? Because the movies don't go on to make a lot of money. Like stop motion films are very niche and they cater to like a specific group of people, not even like animation nerds and not even people who would go to watch animated films in the cinema. It's like a completely different, tinier bracket. And they're not like blockbuster hits or anything. Like Kubo, I don't think made any money in the at the box office. So is it like a quiet taste? Because it is recognizable. Like the movements are sort of weird-ish. And if you didn't know, you might think like, you know, it looked kind of janky. Just like Wallace and Gromit.
So I only want to watch stop motion that is adult and strange. I'm not particularly interested in Wallace and Gromit, you know, things like Shaun the Sheep and stuff. Even when I was growing up and watching Naughty, I would always think, just move faster, for God's sake. You know, as an adult, I hear how cruel that is, knowing how long it takes to do. But the weirdness and the slowness of it all was a little bit difficult for me. I do think that even if it's not for you, even if you find yourself pulled away from it, Kubo by Laika really showcases the beauty with which this can be done. I can't imagine anyone going in to watch Kubo and coming out going, well, that was a waste of time, because the sheer beauty of the animation and the creation is so great.
I love Kubo. I also wanted to say, though, that the thing is, all of the things you said, the not doing so well in the box office, the niche market, the having only targeting a particular segment of the audience, weirdly, it's like that also relates to the stories that stop motion films often seem to do. You never see stop motion doing a Madagascar style story, right? So I wonder whether there's some overlap in terms of the creativity that attracts that craft and the kinds of stories that they want to tell. Because Coraline, Kubo, Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride, none of those are, even Wallace and Gromit or Shaun the Sheep, are not typical child-friendly animation. It's a very particular kind.
I know we're talking about a lot of like very prestige titles when it comes to like stop motion and the art behind it, but my favorite stop motion is Robot Chicken on Adult Swim. I love Robot Chicken, and they do it on a weekly basis. So if you think that people are crazy, people like Wes Anderson and Tim Burton, they do it like seasonally when they feel like it. These guys have been doing it for what, 15, 20 years now on Adult Swim. So yeah, just shouting out like Robot Chicken.
Also, we are getting lots of great recommendations coming in. Whatchamacallit, who mentioned both Nightmare Before Christmas and Kubo, also says Into the Spider-Verse, Legend of Aang. There are just too many. So I know that we're trying to shy away a little bit from Disney, but I think Into the Spider-Verse was really kind of a game changer for the hero in question, for the hero at the heart of it.
And also an example of how that film could not have worked as live action, right? A great example of why animation was so essential.
Yep. But you know that when I saw the first trailer, and when a lot of people saw the first trailer, they didn't like the way it moved. Mm. They were like, why does it look so cheap? Or it looks like weird flash animation from the mid-2000s. But then when it sort of paired with the story so well, that you can't imagine it doing anything else. Like that movement, the sort of comic booky movement, worked like perfectly for that movie.
Let's see. We also have a pair of messages from Emily and Dan saying Attack on Titan.
I never watched that.
I want to, though.
And just to say, because we are going to be hearing a little bit of Scooby-Doo very shortly, we have Az who says, I prefer the Looney Tunes compared to Disney when I was a kid. Sadly, Looney Tunes didn't grow as well as Disney now. And that is kind of a pity, but I also like how they occupy a very specific chunk in our childhood. Maybe not so great for them, but great for us. And distinct, yes, from Looney Tunes itself, but Hanna-Barbera also really occupies a very specific animation space. So we are going to be hearing a little bit of Scooby. Let us know, though, what are your favorite animation films, shows, characters, anything at all? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? We got some work to do now. Where are you? We need some help from you now. Come on, Scooby-Doo, I see you. Pretending you got a sliver. You're not fooling me, 'cause I can see the way you shake and shiver. You know we got a mystery to solve. So Scooby-Doo, be ready for your act.
Don't hold back.
And Scooby-Doo, if you come through, you're gonna have yourself a Scooby.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:07 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Today we are talking about animation, why we love it, what some of our favourites are. And I mean, we've gone half an hour and we haven't actually talked about that much Studio Ghibli. And that is just a travesty and we had to play a bit of Totoro.
I mean, Studio Ghibli is almost every animator's inspiration at this point, right? And I think what I love about I think back to my first exposure to Studio Ghibli, which I believe was Princess Mononoke. And I remember that what got me was just how different their animation was from other Western-inspired animation, in the sense that, you know, the art is anime, of course, but just even the storytelling, the detail in the background, the kind of visual language that they draw on, it feels like you're watching a completely different experience. And it feels, it makes you aware of how it's not just the words that define a culture or a language. It's also the way something looks.
So I was exposed to Studio Ghibli 2 days ago when we reviewed Spirited Away. But that's the first thing I watched from the studio. I mentioned during the review that it's been a blind spot for like a long, long time. I've wanted to get into it for like a long, long time. And it's one of those experiences where when you watch it for the first time, then you realize how much you've been missing, or you realize how much you haven't seen in terms of influence in other films or in other animations or other cartoons. Because then you pick out stuff and go, oh, so that's where it came from. Or now I see where this person got these ideas. So yeah, this is like, literally I've seen one movie from the studio, but I will fix that very soon.
I think actually this is our Giants segment, because we just heard Studio Ghibli. We are going to be closing off later on with Pixar. And actually the bulk of the messages that we've been getting have kind of been looking at these two studios. Before we get there, though, I wanted to talk a bit about Totoro, because if you listen to that song, so I know, Arvin, you haven't seen it, but just that song captures the spirit of about 30% of the movie really, really well. The lighthearted, you know, young girls exploring the countryside, having a great time portion of the movie. However, Totoro has recently been ruined for me by all these discussions about what it might actually mean. And so I wanted to ask you, Sharmila, because we have gotten a number of messages about Ghibli and about Totoro. Before we get to them, I wanted to ask you what you think it means. Do you think that it is all about essentially death and loss?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. The first time I watched it, again, I watched it as a slightly older, I would think I was already a teenager in my late teens. And yeah, and you know, I was already in that in that headspace of being a goth-loving, like melancholy teenager anyway. So totally, I mean, it is that double layer of the images being super cute and really cuddly, but yeah, being about loss. That's what I think it is.
Right. And also just kind of disguising Totoro's essential strangeness behind the creepiness of it all. And the fact that he's now become this mega stuffed toy phenomenon, I think also ignores, like we spoke about in Spirited Away, the fundamental weirdness behind so much of Ghibli. So just to say that... we have Ishwari saying Totoro forever. We have Ken Hong saying Whisper of the Heart, the ultimate Ghibli Easter egg movie, which is a fun one that I want to watch. I haven't seen. We also have Tata simply saying definitely Studio Ghibli's works. Nurul Azila saying Spirited Away, followed by also Dungeons and Dragons. And Izzat saying Grave of the Fireflies and Usopp Santorian.
Usopp Santorian, oh my god, I haven't heard that in decades.
Nor the two of those things combined.
Yes, yep. You know, I feel like the contrast between, was it Spirited Away in Dungeons & Dragons?
Yes.
Yeah, again, ace comparison. I also wanted to say that like Studio Ghibli is a great example of how you can create worlds and animation the way in which you cannot create with live action. You're sitting in Japan, but you're animating worlds that can be anything. It can be World War II Japan. It can be, you know, a world in which a castle can move. It can be up in the sky. And that's something that animation does.
Do you guys think that the question we asked in the beginning about why people don't like animation applies for anime as well? Because anime isn't made for kids. It has like two very specific audiences in mind, right? So they're the kids, but they're also very much adult movies, like actual feature length films for adults. Like even their runtimes go like 2 hours or 2.5 hours. They're long movies. So do you think that same thing applies? Like people grow up, if you are familiar with the culture, do you grow out of anime? Because I don't think so. I think you grow into anime at some point.
Not in Japan, at least. But that's because they're such a visual culture and it's such a big part of just storytelling there.
Yeah, I think that you growing into anime is exactly right. And even growing through anime, because of course, it's not a monolith, right? There are so many different forms that live within it, some also more adult than others. So I do think that if you wanted to just spend your whole life watching Japanese anime, you still wouldn't be able to get through it because they've had years, they've had decades of creating it and kind of building so many layers and worlds upon it. We do have this tweet, I think, from Shamil, who says, I think you guys need to do a topic on Japanese anime versus Western animation. And while that might be something for another day, I do think it's worth discussing because there is a very, very distinct gap in terms of style and also in terms of storytelling and where the stories are willing to go.
So I think for me, I'm a lot more willing to watch the kids' stories in Western animation than I am with Japanese animation. With Japanese animation, I prefer the more adult stories. I prefer the stories that are more complicated. So Studio Ghibli for sure, but even stuff like Ghost in the Shell, you know, so I don't think it might be because I grew into anime rather than grew up with anime.
I think also like anime... I don't know how this sounds, but anime, they allow the movie to breathe. Like there's a lot of like breathing space and still images and there's pictures of the atmosphere, the, you know, the whole vibe of the thing. Whereas like Western animation has a very energetic sort of like upbeat. Everything needs to keep moving at like 100 miles per hour. There's no time to rest kind of thing. That's why their runtimes are so short, like 1.5 hours, right? Weirdly, I know we're going to play Pixar, but Pixar is the only studio that allows that breathing time. Like it's the closest to anime in the sense that you have long scenes of people just emotionally beating you up, you know? And that's the only studio I can think of that does that other than the Japanese studios.
And Laika. Laika makes very few movies. I think that also that point about the energy of Western animation And here we come back full circle to the start of the show, that idea of it being primarily Disney, right? For the longest time, they were musicals, which meant that you come right in and you get the little town, you know, and the big introduction song. And that's generally how they go. They start with a song, you get the lay of the land, the play of the characters, and then you dive headfirst into the story. And that's, I think, partly why we also don't feel that breathing space so much, because the pace of those movies is the pace of a musical. It goes at that pace.
And I think it's a lot more meant for children as well as adults. I think Western animation, almost exclusively, unless we're talking about things like Spider-Verse or so on, are very much trying to get kids, parents, and adults who might like animation. Whereas in Japan, you have different segments of animation that is clearly targeted at different people. And so they have again, that idea of not treating it as a genre, but treating it as a way to tell different kinds of stories.
I guess the coolest thing is with more people exposed and, you know, like with streaming services and with YouTube and stuff, you can clearly see the blending of both influences, like, you know, who watches what, and you can see how animation studios influence. I don't know if they influence anime, but a lot of anime influences other animation studios. And that sort of blending and synchronization is nice to watch. It's very fun.
So we have so many anime-based messages. Zakaria says, one of my fave TV series is, and I'm hesitant about this, Code Geass, G-E-A-S-S. And for film, I would choose Akira.
Oh, Akira is awesome. I haven't watched Code Geass. Again, I'm not sure if that's how you say it, but yeah, Akira is a great one.
Also super influential.
Mm-hmm. We have a whole series of Makoto Shinkai lovers, of which I am a part. I love Makoto Shinkai. Aneka says, Your Name, hands down the most beautiful animation ever. Sarah says, From Up on Poppy Hill, Weathering with You, Your Name. And Neural says, five centimeters per second.
I've only watched Your Name on that list, so I'm now taking notes of all of those.
Yep, adding all to the watch list.
Just the glory of his work is something else. I mean, we've been extolling the virtues of other makers, right? But in terms of who really stands out to me at the moment, who is a new to me filmmaker that I've seen in the last 5 years who I find really exciting, he's definitely way up there. We have this message that says Identity. Not the John Cusack film.
Well, no, I was like, that's not animated. No, I don't know what Identity is.
Yeah, it's an anime. Hmm. I looked it up, but I've never watched it. And then Kirenta says Castlevania and She-Ra.
She-Ra gave me life when I was a kid.
Castlevania is amazing. So if anyone hasn't checked out that series, Castlevania is one of the best things that I've seen on Netflix.
And because we are just about to head to Pixar, and, you know, honestly, we don't have to spend too much time talking about Pixar because it somehow makes its way into, 80% of our shows. We've done an entire supercut on it, but we do have some messages. So Sue Ann says Inside Out and Zootopia. Sin says Pixar's Up and Wall-E. And I would add to that, actually, what we're about to play, because I love, love, love Coco. Keep those recommendations coming. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Mama Coco, your papa, he wanted you to have this.
Mama, wait.
Remember me. Though I have to say goodbye, remember me. Don't let it make you cry. For even
Look.
If I'm far away, I hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me. Though I have to travel far, remember me. Each time you hear a sad guitar, know that I'm with you, the only way that I can be. Until you're in my arms again, remember me.
For your information, there's a lot more to ogres than people think.
Example?
Example?
Okay, ogres are like onions.
They stink?
Yes. No.
Oh, they make you cry?
No.
Oh, you leave them out in the sun, they get all brown, start sprouting little white hairs.
No! Layers! Onions have layers. Ogres have layers. Onions have layers? You get it. We both have layers.
Oh, you both have layers. Oh. You know, not everybody likes onions.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:21, and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvind. We've been spending the whole show talking about our favourite animations, whether it is in film or television, and what makes them special. We want to know what yours are. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we have come to the part of the show that I will lovingly call the Dandelion Lion section, because we've been talking about kind of the big players, right? We've mentioned Disney and Pixar. We've talked about anime, which is its whole thing. And now, you know, there are a lot of other studios who perhaps don't deal as heavily in animation, or where their animation doesn't get loved as much. There are also lesser movies, right, from the big players. And that doesn't mean that they're any less worthy in some ways, but yeah, they're often forgotten.
So I just wanted to say that in all our talk of, oh, animation can appeal to both children and adults because it can be about this and death and this and whatever, we didn't say that this is also a way in which animation can appeal to both kids and adults. I mean, you have Shrek on the one hand with fart jokes and stinky whatever, and on the other hand with puns and satire of Disney, making fun of fairy tales, which really only adults can understand. And I think you're right that this ends up becoming a little bit in a sort of high concept conversation about animation quality. People don't often bring up things like Shrek or Madagascar. But I love films like that as well. I love Despicable Me, which is by Illumination, for instance, because they couple the weirdness of how these things look on screen with the weirdness of the humor, which I love.
My mind is filled with Minions. I wish you hadn't brought it up. I can't. All I can see and hear now are just Minions.
What language are they speaking in?
What is it that they call their language? It's, I remember it, because the person who voiced the Minions is the director, right? It's and he kind of made it up, which is why you're also going to hear like some Indonesian in there. They really threw in a bunch.
So it's so weird that Shrek came under the others bracket, because I was going to ask if Shrek is the most influential animated film of the last 25 years because of his meme quality, of his memeability. Shrek has taken on like so many different forms. He's been contorted and twisted and made to do things that we cannot say on air. And he's become a meme. Like Shrek is literally... various forms of him have shown up on different sites and meme pages and have gone on and on. I don't know if a lot of people even know where Shrek is from if they haven't seen the films. But I'm thinking like that character alone is one of the most influential, iconic characters that has been animated, at least in the last couple of decades.
So Shrek doesn't age, I realized, right? And that's one of the great things about these, about animation in general. But a lot of these kinds of cartoons, I have friends' children who love Shrek. I have friends' children who love Kung Fu Panda. And so I think that's one of the great things about animation, is that I think it ages a lot slower than other kinds of film.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also the reason why Shrek has become so influential is partly because it was released in an internet age, right? As opposed to some of the others, which are older and have since been rediscovered, or you might love as a kid, but it doesn't mean that the memeability is going to be so immediately present. But with Shrek, it came out and then re-came out over and over again at very specific moments, which is also why we see, aside from the product creation that is the Minions, right? Which is also why I think they are so memeable, because they also came out at a very particular moment in history.
I also think that we shouldn't we shouldn't sort of forget or overlook that there's a difference between Shrek or Despicable Me and Boss Baby. Is it Boss Baby? Baby Boss? Boss Baby?
Boss
One
Baby.
Of Boss mm-hmm. Baby.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, because I think it's easy to kind of think, oh, this brand of comedy, you can just throw like any story onto animation and it'll work. And not really. It does actually take a certain amount of finesse and cleverness to be able mm-hmm. to tell these stories.
Do you remember how many Shrek films there are? Because I think they're about four.
I think four. Plus a Broadway musical.
You see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So even going to the Minions, I think they are more iconic than, I don't know how to say this, but they're more iconic than Coco, let's say.
It is true. You don't see Coco balloons and t-shirts and mugs.
Or McDonald's
as many.
Meals.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think McDonald's meals is actually a great comparison because you could say that Coco isn't made for that. I mean, the main character in Coco is not Coco. So, you know, it's things like that, right? Where it's not made for that purpose. Whereas something like The Minions is pure silent movie comedy. And then after that, they sell toys. So it really works out that way. We do have a bunch of messages that didn't earlier neatly fall into specific categories. So, for example, we have Doraisa who is saying for TV, I'm so happy you brought this up again, X-Men animated series from the 90s, because we talked about it last week and we all love it. As for movie, Coco and the Croods is tied.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Well,
isn't
clearly
it?
We all love Coco. Croods, I must say, is not one of my favorites.
I can't remember if I watched Croods or not. That's the one with Nicolas Cage and Emma Stone?
Yes.
I think.
Voicing cave yes. people.
So
cave
I know people, that yes. much. I know I haven't seen it also. So, but I mean, to tie with Coco, it ought to be good. We also have Tian Guan who says, when I was a kid, I would always tune into NTV7 to watch Ninja Boy. Boy, do I miss those times.
Oh, I never watched Ninja Boy.
Same. Didn't catch Ninja Boy.
Anura says, Naruto, Boruto, He-Man, it's countless. How do you list them all? I liked how 80s cartoons like He-Man, Centurions, Thundercats, etc. had a PSA or a moral lesson at the end. You also have to mention Avatar and Korra, fantastic animation.
So Avatar is one of those things that I've been dying to get into. I just know that it'll take up a lot of time. But given how awful the movie was and how everyone keeps saying that the series is so great, I really, really want to start watching it.
It's like the Doctor Who of animation. It's like there's so much.
Yes.
I don't know how to get into it.
I just love the Thundercat shout.
I still haven't seen it. We also have others just going really hard for Avatar. So Wookie Duck says Avatar, Last Airbender. Sukhdip says definitely the same. It also had a big impact to how animated shows were made and written.
Oh, yeah, I would say so, right? Because Avatar, I think, shaped a lot of that kind of storytelling, and also realizing that you could do those kinds of series, like fantasy series animated, mm-hmm. at least in the West.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I wanted to say, though? I'm surprised that Rango hasn't shown up in...
Oh, my gosh!
Yeah. Because for me, it's one of the most underrated things, and it's one of my favorite things. Like, I love Rango. I could watch it, like, once a month at least. It's such a good film. I'm kind of surprised that no one said Rango.
Ah, so my love of Rango is why I like Uncle Ugo. From Luca. I'm just coming to realize that. I'm having an on-air realization. Rango is great. I think it's, again, this is what happens when you are one of the lesser animations, because as is, animation already doesn't get as much promotion, I think. And then you add to that when you're not one of the big prestige releases, also because Rango is just fundamentally strange, isn't it? I mean, it thrives on the idea that it has a weird hero. The story is really off kilter. It's voiced, Rango's voiced by Johnny Depp. You know, it's weird in a variety of ways. I love it so much, but I think that that's why it never really took off.
And not for kids, I don't think. I mean, I can't imagine a child sort of really getting that particular brand of weirdness that Rango is.
Mm-hmm. And it's all like dialogue humor, and it's so witty and it's so fast. But I remember watching it when it came out and just going like, animation shouldn't look like this because it looks so super real and with the photorealism and stuff. Now, maybe it's like it's doable, but for its time, it was like, what am I even looking at?
Hey, speaking of, we have Alex who says The Adventures of Tintin. And, you know, we haven't actually talked about not much about the uncanny valley-ness of some animation. Tintin's, I enjoyed it, but I think it does also fall into that category of dead eye occasionally.
So, you know, weirdly, I don't mind Tintin because they don't look particularly human. They're not trying to look human. I do mind it, however. So Lion King, I didn't love. Not trying to look human, but, you know, a lot of the stuff they do in Love, Death and Robots, the closer they get to trying to animate photorealism, the more I realize I find it a little bit difficult.
So I didn't mind most of that stuff. But the thing that the Uncanny Valley that I felt the most was during, what's the name of the movie? Beowulf?
I thought you were going to say Cats, but yes, Beowulf.
We don't talk about Cats.
That's true.
We don't have to.
Oh, Beowulf was weird. And I think that's because it also came out at a time when the animation wasn't as advanced. So they were trying to do something and
yes,
never quite got there.
It was the Rock Scorpion King levels, you know?
Yes.
That's really what we're talking about here. Yeah. We also have Syed Hussein, who simply says Iron Giant. And we've actually dedicated a whole show to how much we all enjoyed that. So if you missed it, you can find that podcast. Asnita says 90s anime, Saint Seiya, Sailor Moon, who comes up every week now, Slam Dunk. I love Disney, Pixar and Studio Ghibli, but I also love, get this, Anastasia, the songs and How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, How to Train Your Dragon is amazing. Anastasia is a sort of the deep cut of animation. I think if you love Disney, you might have hated it. I'm not sure.
I really love Anastasia, partly because I think it captured a very romantic, lush world in a way that would have been very difficult and expensive, actually, to do in real life, or rather in live action. I actually think that Anastasia is the best possible version of that story.
I'm not sure why it didn't do better than it did, though, because I do remember it looking beautiful.
It was voiced by Meg Ryan. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that How to Train Your Dragon is such a beautiful film. I love it so much, and I can rewatch it anytime.
Yeah, and both, even the sequels, they're like so, so good.
One of those where the sequels actually hold up really well.
Yeah, yeah. Anastasia is like the Tame Impala of the Disney world. It's the thing that the Disney hipsters show you, like, I know you've seen this, but have you seen this? You know, that's Anastasia, the thing that no one has watched, but you have. So it makes you cool.
You know, How to Train Your Dragon, it came at a very specific time where there was also Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I also enjoyed. And I think that they kind of occupy that prestige-ish place, you know, in this particular category. Xiong An says, The Prince of Egypt is an underrated masterpiece, not just for its incredible visuals and soundtrack, but also how it tells a well-known religious tale to delve into more mature themes about self-doubt, faith and belief.
Also, Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey, come on, that song. I loved Prince of Egypt. I think it looks beautiful, the scene where they part the sea. It is actually visually stunning.
Also, watching it today, you realize like how many things they did back then that they shouldn't have been able to do. Like some of the stuff in it like shouldn't have existed, and they figured it out for like everyone else.
We have Anis, who says, for TV, Madeline, and for film, Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, Emperor's New Groove. Such a Disney outlier. Like, yeah. I don't think they ever made another film that looked like that or felt like that. Lilo and Stitch maybe is the closest, but yeah, not really. It was a very distinct Disney phase.
Also super funny.
Yes, yes. It's one of those where you laugh so hard that you're not sure you're going to make it because you're so breathless. And it really is that funny. F. Moon says, Dr. Seuss, The Lorax, Klaus, Shrek, Roly Poly and Oly, PB&J and many more. Sorry, I forgot about PB&J until this very moment.
I never watched PB&J.
Guys,
oh, the otters.
The PB&J otter, yeah.
Yes.
So I wanted to shout out the Dr. Seuss animated films. Lorax is great. I love Horton Hears a Who. Horton Hears a Who is such a beautiful animated film.
I even like the new Grinch movie with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Is that fully animated? Because I never watched it.
It is. It's also the one that is the remake of the Jim Carrey one.
Yeah, because I'm weirdly attached to the Jim Carrey one, even though the movie was terrible. He's a great Grinch.
I mean, he's a cartoon, so.
Yeah.
And just to close off, before I ask each of you for a recommendation to take us into the weekend. We have Ro, who says Allegro non troppo, 1976, which from what I understand is the Italian answer to Fantasia, which I now very badly want to watch. Az simply says Totoro, Totoro. Another song I like is Ponyo. Ponyo really gets stuck in your head, I will say that. And Lynette says King Julian reminds me of a small country with a simple trusting leader who gets taken advantage of, which took a dark turn.
Oh, yes. I didn't expect that.
All right. So we've been asking you for your animation favorites and recommendations. Please keep them coming, whether you find us on, whether you tell us rather on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my, and you can message us as well, BFM Popcorn, on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. But to close off, I thought we could each just talk about something that we haven't yet mentioned on the show. If you would make one recommendation for people to check out over the weekend, what would it be?
I'm going to recommend Pixar Shorts. So I love the Pixar Shorts that come before their full-length features, and they sort of pioneered this concept of allowing new animators to have a space to experiment and to tell short stories. So if you don't have the time or don't feel like committing to a full animated film, just go on YouTube or whatever, look up the whole reel of Pixar Shorts. They're all so great. They're all so different, and they'll take up very little amount of your time.
I would suggest watching this thing called Gotham Knight. It is an anthology of short animated films that act like the bridge between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. So it's like different styles, different animation. Some of them are like classic, quote-unquote, Western animation. There's a lot of anime in there. It's only about like 45 minutes to an hour, but completely worth it. I think they just dropped it on HBO Go. So it's available there. But it's that's a good one. That's something that I watch like regularly and end of it.
I'm going to do two. One more lengthy, one very brief. I don't know if either of you remember The Animals of Farthing Wood.
No.
Yeah, so that ran like ages ago. And I remember watching it as a kid and loving it so very much. It's kind of melancholy and beautiful. And I think that you can probably find it on YouTube. So if you wanted to check that out. But the other one is, I guess, you know, I've been thinking about this idea of animation being more for kids. And I wanted to recommend something that is purely for adults, which is actually a straight up romance, and that is Chico and Rita, which is actually a Spanish animation, and it tells this sort of long, very, in some ways, a very romantic, very big love story that also feels very intimate. It's beautifully animated. The soundtrack is amazing, and yeah, you would. I enjoyed it. I hope people do as well. So keep those animation recommendations coming. And thank you so much for listening. This has been Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.